you watch any of the Bitcoin conference thingy in Miami?
Dude, me and Jana have been watching so much of it. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, and so
Tony Hawk was there. What?
What? Okay, wait. Tell me what you're going to tell me. I'll save what I was going to ask. Because we talked about it yesterday briefly.
Yeah. I mean, Tony Hawk was there. Floyd Mayweather was there. Ron Paul was there. Paris Hilton was there. It's pretty crazy. Very random group of people. I mean, like, the people I care about are the, you know, actual technologists.
Right.
People who are building stuff in Bitcoin. But
yeah,
nonetheless, like, it's just kind of insane the way that it's breaking mainstream. And they actually just announced yesterday this company, Strike, which works in Bitcoin. They're just a payments network built on Bitcoin. They've been investing heavily in El Salvador and just like helping individuals on the ground get access to wallets and begin paying each other and receiving payments in Bitcoin. And in El Salvador, like, the remittances can be up to 50% fees. Like, if they have family members in the US who are sending them money, maybe, and everyone in El Salvador uses the US dollar. So they're basically like at the bottom of the barrel for the US dollar. They get charged a ton of fees, and 70% of the population has no banking whatsoever. So they're super vulnerable. But this company, Strike, goes there and just starts setting up individuals on this payment network. And over the course of a few months, they're improving the GDP of the entire country. This one company, and the guy who runs this company is like my age.
Mm.
And then he ends up meeting with the president, and they announced yesterday that they're trying to make Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador.
Yeah, that's what I was reading about. That's the only thing that I've noticed about the conference or anything, or that stuck out to me was seeing that El Salvadorians.
El Salvadorians. Yeah. I'm not sure what the plural is, but
yeah, they're getting direct benefits from having Bitcoin. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, it's like, at the same time though, you've got what? So Elon Musk was talking about cummies. What the fuck was that?
Elon Musk is not a very good person to listen to lately.
Yeah. That's kind of what I've been noticing. Ever.
Yeah, like, you've got these shitcoins, Dogecoin, of course everyone knows about, Cummies and Cum Rocket or whatever
That's what it is, Cum Rocket or something?
Something like that. You know, it's funny enough, this has actually happened before. People try to make shitcoins for porn or to, like, pay sex workers. It was called Spankcoin, I think.
Yeah.
And so, like, this has already happened and been a stupid trend that was, like,
that makes
basically
so much
a scam.
Sense. Okay.
Yeah. And so,
every Twitch streamer has a stupid ass economy. Like, it's all their like bits and bits, their fucking emojis and all that shit. Like, bits too. Yeah, they make their own little bits, and I even had bits, and
yeah,
that's essentially what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, they don't even try and pretend. See, that's why, like, bits or, like, Fortnite coins or whatever they're called.
It's like an NFT, essentially, right?
No. They're just centralized. It's just a centralized database. Right. And they're admitting it. And that's the beautiful thing. They're not pretending to be a decentralized crypto.
Yeah, right.
And that's the thing with all of these small shitcoins is they use those buzzwords. Kind of like people use AI as a buzzword to say that their software is really smart.
Mm.
And really, maybe they're just doing simple automation. But anyway, they're just buzzwords to try and say that, like, oh, no one can shut us down and we're totally open and the whole world's using us. But actually, in all reality, most of these run on like AWS, Amazon servers. They're super centralized and they just end up scamming people. And there's a moat of these surrounding Bitcoin, which is actually helping, you know, people in need across the world. So just how muddy the water is in that, and the fact that, you know, Bitcoin doesn't have a PR team or, like, it's not a company.
Right.
it's open source code. It's an entity. So the narratives, the mainstream media kind of just says what it says, and the narratives just spin off, and people are mostly just kind of misinformed about it. It's pretty crazy.
Well, and it seems like Elon would necessarily not want Bitcoin to be shining the brightest light too, right? Maybe. I mean, is that making a guesstimate? Is that like too, I don't know. That might be too far-fetched. I don't know.
Well, the thing that's what's happening with Elon is deep and conspiratorial.
Mm.
It's kind of hard to get into, but essentially he comes out very positively about Bitcoin and then flips hard over energy, really energy misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Cause don't they say that like mining for Bitcoin heats up the like, whatever, yeah, like heats up the earth essentially.
Yeah.
But they're also saying that about indoor marijuana grows. So it's like,
oh,
there's so much shit that is apparently heating up the earth. And if it is true, I mean, that sucks, but
if you compare like Bitcoin to like Xbox, mm-hmm. or Bitcoin to, I don't know, and many of like the everyday objects and waste that we produce, they're kind of incomparable, especially considering the value that Bitcoin gives to the world. But it's a misnomer from the start, because Bitcoin actually utilizes over 70%, I think, renewable energy. And it's extremely green for that reason, because they're able to use energy that otherwise is wasted, because energy is very much proximity based. So like, or just it wastes if you don't use it. So they, you know, Oklahoma City has so much energy they allocate per day, how much of that gets used, and then whatever doesn't get used basically gets wasted.
Yeah.
Some of it gets stored. A lot of it gets wasted. So that and a million other reasons. The Bitcoin energy like whole rabbit hole goes extremely deep. But I mean, for me, someone who's like thinks a lot about the future and the state of the earth, and the climate, like Bitcoin is a reason that I'm optimistic, or it's my hope for really a greener world. Because the fundamental first principle for me is that we have limited resources on this earth backed by infinite dollars, infinite money. Bitcoin is scarce, and it's tied to the energy that we actually produce. So scarce money backing scarce resources. For me, I just try and bring it back to that simple point. But like, you know, the it's a hot point in the media. Like people, Bitcoiners are fun to hate on,
because
it's like tech bros or like rich investor types or, you know, anarchists or whatever, like all of these labels, kind of just calling them cultural undesirables.
Yeah, or they're crazy, I mean, they can, or they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Or they just like, they want to force the world to like use their currency and to like pump their bags or whatever. You know, like, of course they're going to say that, like the media always, if you look on history, like everything big that gets built, the media kind of talks shit on it up until it changes the world and it's undeniable.
Yeah.
Like what they're saying about the internet, like about the internet being for pornographers and gamblers and hackers, basically just undesirables. They're saying, it's just fighting what's new. It's fighting the change.
Right.
And of course the status quo is always going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But now with what's happening in El Salvador, it's kind of undeniable that Bitcoin is serving some of those who are in need the most and who are under the dollar hegemony.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is really encouraging for me.
Yeah,
to see.
No, that's sick to hear. I'm glad that they're getting the help that they need.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not praising the government in El Salvador.
Right.
By any means, they've done some like shitty authoritarian things, but it's not about them. It's about the people on the ground who are really getting screwed the most.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, it's cool. Like, that's what, I don't know, that's what you want technology to do.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of the Silicon Valley, like, companies and stuff, it's just, it frustrates me. Like, you're just making apps on apps on apps, mm-hmm. just serving the same audience, us, more and more digital.
Yeah, I think we're good on self-serving apps right now. I think we could take like a 5-year break or like 3 years of just like, we've got DoorDash, we have Uber, we have Limes, we have like all kinds of shit. Yeah, I think we're good for a minute. But
yeah,
we got Tinder. It doesn't work, but
got Tinder, we got Bumble, we got Grindr.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's
others. What more do you need?
Yeah.
But I mean, you'll be happy to know though, I set a weekly timer now to buy a certain amount of Bitcoin now that I can afford it. But hopefully I won't have to pull it out again for some ridiculous bill. But yeah, trying, giving it another shot.
Dude, nice. That's it's almost more of a vote than it is an investment in my eyes at this point.
Yeah.
Whenever I get pissed off of the government or whatever, which has been happening Bitcoin. A lot lately. Yeah, I just stack Bitcoin right there. Calms me down. No, but yeah, we'll definitely have like a 1 or 2 Bitcoin episodes to kind of go deep on it. Like, I know that some people are curious about it and some people are like, they don't want to hear about it. So everyone knows I'm pretty damn into it. So I don't want to spend all the time on the podcast talking about it.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely go deep pretty soon here.
For sure. So I had a, speaking of DoorDash, I had a very interesting DoorDash message last night. If you'd want to hear it, I don't know if that's it's pretty long, so I'm going to have to focus for a second. And
are you driving?
Like, no. I ordered. Yeah, this is the first time in a long time I've had a late night splurge. Just because I was like working on shit at home all day yesterday and forgot to like eat type of day. Next thing I know, it's like 12 and I'm hungry as fuck. So I wanted Buffalo Wild Wings. And my DoorDash driver, and I'm violently high too. And
this is what you were doing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. Working hard in the lab. Yes. So I get this message. Josh, this is Mike Honcho, your DoorDash driver. I'm texting you to let you know that I picked up your order from Buffalo Wild Wings, and I'm currently hurdling myself both time and space in order to make a timely delivery to you. I've been granted permission from Space Force using their global positioning satellite system that circumvent the globe. According to them, that's what it says, I'm approximately 14 minutes away from delivery. I have take a note of your delivery instructions, and I will leave your order at the door as requested, because as a member of Prestige Worldwide, this dude abides. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for your order and for choosing DoorDash as your delivery option. I truly hope you're having a wonderful weekend, and I will have your order to you as quickly as possible. Once again, thank you.
Okay. Nice. That's that sounds like an email macro, or like where it's like, hello, first name. Thank you for, you know, like where you have a template.
Yeah.
And you just insert. I wonder if that guy's like a programmer and he has like, he wrote a script to take his DoorDash orders.
Probably. But I think that scared me out of ordering late again. I don't know if I'll do that again. I was like, should I eat this food? But I literally was staring at it for a good 5 minutes because I was not in the headspace to be receiving those kind of messages, and really threw me off. It really took me out of my self-centered bubble for a second. So I can appreciate it at the same time. I'd never been more flattered and scared to eat food at the same time, if that makes sense.
What if you just piled some C4 just like under your fries?
Yeah.
Just like.
Yeah. Yeah. He put firecrackers in my chicken wings. I think is what happened. But I mean, I'm fine today. I definitely ate the food. There was a voice in me that was telling me not to eat it, but I'm fine. But yeah, I had to share that for a second. I had to make sure it was real.
I haven't had any interactions quite like that in Utah yet, but this is definitely an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
This area. I'm in the, I won't give exact location, but I'm in the Utah Valley area. And it's like, well, obviously, you know, Utah is the home of the Mormons,
mm-hmm.
the LDS, Latter-day Saints.
LDS.
Yeah. And so you expect that side of it. But what's weird is that this whole area has become like basically a tech hub as well. They call it Silicon Slopes. And so all of these tech companies have moved in. And in fact, like the city or the town city I work in,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure like 98% of their money comes from tech companies.
Wow.
Which come from Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. One of my coworkers, he's lived here for like a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me he's like 10 years ago, and we were in this parking lot, you know, there's business buildings everywhere. There's a fucking Cabela's and it just everything you can imagine. And he's like, this whole area was flat like 5 years ago. And I was like, what?
Damn.
So it's like a real cultural shock. Like Mormons and people have probably lived here for a long time. And then just all these tech people and money is just flooded in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe I don't know, like I'm an unwanted new entrant. But I don't know. It's pretty interesting. One thing, like me and Jana saw this store. It was like a lingerie store.
Yeah.
But it was husband and wife. Romantic. Yeah. Like they have to say it's husband and wife.
Yeah. Damn. I didn't think that there might be a place more sheltered than Oklahoma. But then again, Oklahoma can be rough in certain spots. So I'm sure Utah, if you're by the Mormons, there's going to be a lot of that stuff. I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely. But it's weird. It's like old remnants of it. But then there's other stuff that's very much, I don't know, on the opposite end of things.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of another example. Well, you know, like the Mormons are, in some ways, they're more sheltered than like what we would know in the more Bible Belt, like Christian context. But there's also different things that they focus on versus Christians.
Hmm.
I don't know, where they like focus on alcohol very heavily.
Yeah.
Like I learned quick. I told one of my coworkers, I was like, hey, you know, thanks for training me. It's been awesome. Like, When I get up to Utah, I want to take you out and get a beer, you know, just like something like that, like that type of deal. He was like, oh, I don't drink.
Oh, shit.
And I mean, he wasn't rude about it.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Oh, but
okay.
Yeah, that's interesting.
This is where I need to be aware of
the
culture that I'm entering.
Do you know, like, are the alcohol laws different? Have you checked yet?
Yeah, they are different. It's like, everything's hidden in the background. I went to this place called The Holy Grill.
Yeah.
I thought for sure they didn't have beer.
They didn't have beer? Assuming that they wouldn't have beer.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to have beer.
Right, right.
And I looked at the drinks when I was inside, didn't see anything to do with beer. And then I get outside and I'm about to like back out. And there's like a tiny sticker on the top right of the door that's just like we serve Corona or something like that.
Like so you have to ask for it, but they can't. They probably can't advertise it or something like that.
Yeah, or they can only advertise it in a tiny sticker. Like it wasn't even on the menu.
Holy shit!
I was like, damn, I would have got a cold one for sure. But you know, like I think that's one of the main things.
Yeah.
I don't know what their marijuana laws are like here. I know there is medical use, obviously, but yeah, it's interesting.
Has anyone commented on your accent yet?
Yes, that actually happened yesterday. Someone, or this one of my coworkers, she said, "I have like a southern country accent."
What?
Fuck. In a good way?
Yeah, for real. Which one?
But yeah, I don't know. I guess I gotta take it. Yeah, and someone, there's like this. Well, obviously, it's Utah. There's a lot of mountains.
Yeah.
One of my coworkers points out the window, and there's like a really, really large hill, like an enormous hill, 20 miles in the distance.
Mm.
And he's like, "Do y'all think that's a mountain in Oklahoma?" like make fun of me. And I was like, "Hell yeah, that would be, we'd drive 2 hours to go climb that."
Yeah.
Take
Get
pictures,
up that sucker.
Have a wedding up there.
Yeah. Put it on Pinterest. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Just don't let the Baptists catch you dancing. We'll be good.
Yeah, but you know, it's similar enough. I'm glad I'm not in San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I've been hearing some rough shit about, I mean, California in general, but San Fran doesn't sound too good.
Yeah. It's hard to tell, you know, like I'm sure a lot of people that live in California and maybe in LA, maybe in San Francisco, maybe it is a lot of people see the videos on social media and stuff like that, and they just think that it's kind of overblown, maybe,
yeah,
or it's overly focused on.
I'm sure a lot of Californians are probably tired of the whole country talking about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, still though, it seems like what's happening there is a disaster.
Significant, yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's overblown, but I don't know. Like
maybe I would rather, if I was going to be in California, I would want to be so far north that I'm basically in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
That's like where I'd want to be, because the pretty like forests, and then you got Oregon.
Yeah. It's, well, like one of my friends, Austin, he lives in San Diego, and like San Diego is pretty far north, isn't it?
I think.
Or like more north than.
I have no idea, actually.
See, I don't even know. He said it's okay there, but it's just what I've heard the worst of is San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But it's just like the size of the homeless population is just enormous. And it's such a complicated problem, like such a strange issue to work around, because it's intertwined with like addiction,
mm-hmm,
and like the economic conditions and just so many different variables, mental health.
Sorry, I'm trying to find San Diego because now I can't stop thinking about it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it is a tricky situation that, I mean, I can't even begin to fathom what they would have to do to fix it, you know, besides like making shit more affordable / giving anyone jobs, which I think people, we were way off. San Diego is basically right next to Mexico.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's like complete opposite. It's right by Baja California is what they call it.
Oh, shit. Well, that shows what I know.
Kind of by Mexicali and Tijuana. Damn. It's right by Tijuana.
Yeah. Well, I gotta hit up Austin then. I want to have him on the podcast anyway.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
He does some crazy biomedical tech research. I don't even understand.
Sick.
But yeah, I mean, it was crazy for a lot of people and for me. Like when I first realized I wanted to be a software developer, I kind of looked at California or looked at San Francisco, and I was like, that's the place I have to go. Mm. Because if I want to take the shortest path to legitimacy and being in a good company or being an upcoming company, you have to go like right to the heat of the fire, basically, right where everything's happening. And that was my mindset for a while. And then it just flipped, like, you know, throughout 2020, everything that's happened, and I'm just like, I don't want to live there. Like, it's so sketchy. Yeah. The taxes are being raised higher and higher. The prices are absolutely insane. You know, it's no wonder that more and more people are being pushed in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, besides making things more affordable or just hiring anyone, it's like, how the hell are they even gonna be able to stay a state at this point? Like, but I say those things like they're easy to do, which I'm sure they're not, but I don't know. Does it just reflect the debt that they're in potentially? Is that what it is? I don't know. Like, we're not economists.
Yeah. I mean,
you are more than I am, but
I think at the root, it has to do with the money and the debt and the fact that the money is broken, but that's at the root. Everything above, all of the politics, all of the state budgets and how they work, the decisions that have been made, I have no idea. I'm just someone,
I guess,
who's kept up with it because I thought about moving there, and I'm curious about like the tech ecosystem there and all of that. And you've just seen a huge flood of lots of people, lots of companies leaving there, going to Miami, going to Austin, Texas.
Well, it definitely seems like that they don't have the homeless in, like, it's not in their best interest. And so then it's kind of weird when you got to start like thinking about the people who have been involved in their politics, you know, on a state level, haven't exactly been just normal politicians. They've also been like celebrities and shit. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's kind of hard, and from an outside perspective, it's kind of hard not to start thinking like, okay, so where the fuck has the best interest been for California for the past like 20 years? The home of, you know, the rich and the famous or whatever. Like, it's kind of no surprise that the homeless are kind of getting the shit in of the stick. And when I say homeless, I mean the people who probably 5 years ago had a home in that state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
potentially.
But that's just my ignorant viewpoint.
No, totally. And just looking at things simply, where you have a place like San Francisco, where you have San Francisco is, I would bet money that San Francisco is the single richest 100 or 200 square miles on the earth, as far as our, you know, our numbers that we make up that say so. And so you have like this dynamic where you just have the richest people, mostly in tech, but some of them in Hollywood and advertising, et cetera, et cetera. And you're just stepping over homeless people in San Francisco.
Mm.
And San Francisco, which has been this home of innovation, driving hundreds of billions of dollars, actually trillions of dollars of supposed productivity and value created. And, you know, technology is supposed to free our time. It's supposed to make things easier, better, more efficient to do.
Yeah.
And it just makes you wonder, where's all that value? All that value is created, yet the average person is worse off now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can that be? Mm-hmm. If we've been so productive and so innovative and advanced science and technology so far. And, you know, and really, I think it goes back to the money.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, for sure, the people at the bottom aren't receiving the benefits of any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Which probably means there's something fucky going on with the laws that are being passed. Kind of what you were saying earlier too.
Yeah. I have no idea how those state laws work, but
yeah.
I know they can't have plastic straws in San Francisco.
Right.
That's just the meme, so I don't know.
Yeah. No plastic straws, but you can have a tent city. It's okay.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, like, no one seems to want to fucking help, but they can drive as many Teslas as they can. Like, it doesn't matter. As long as we have self-driving cars in 5 years, the tent cities will remain. Like, that's what it seems like.
Yeah. No, definitely. I was going to say to all of our California listeners, sorry for our uneducated opinions. Come roast us. Tell us what's really going on.
Yeah, tell me about Oklahoma. Tell me what you think Oklahoma is like. we've heard what the LSDs are like, right? You should call them the LSDs instead of LDS.
The LDS needs to take LSD.
Yeah, man, that would be crazy. If like, do they have communion? If someone like just like. Know. Took a dropper into communion and put it in the communal grape juice, probably, because they wouldn't be drinking wine.
That'd be like
that'd be a crime, but
yeah. What is the? Oh my god, I forgot the name of that movie. Okay, we'll get back to it. I'll remember it. Was the horror movie that was like the in the really pretty. Oh man, I'm drawing blanks.
Did you take LSD this morning, Austin?
I think so.
Dude, but imagining, just dosing a congregation. Like, that'd be a horrible crime to humanity, but it would be insane to see people experiencing a religious, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, on LSD. That'd be...
Yeah, religious experience. Well, it's interesting. The people in the 60s and 70s, when like all of the psychedelic controversy was coming to its head, and what's his name, that professor that was at Harvard, said, tune in, drop out.
That's sleep, my friend.
Sure. Yes. Yeah,
drop out of life with bong in hand, my friend.
Damn, I need to listen to that album.
That's the only Harvard professors I know of are in that band. Yeah.
He's super famous, people will know. But anyway, just when everything was happening with psychedelics and they started to become illegalized after so many experiments. Well, there's theories that terrorists or like hippie terrorists or psychedelic loony terrorists were going to do lots of these attacks where they would like poison the water source or cut the water source with LSD or something like that.
Oh, wow.
It hasn't really happened, but you know who did do that? We've already talked about this, but the government with
MK. Dude, we gotta bring it back.
Like the government and Nixon were spreading the rumors and spreading all the FUD about people who took psychedelics and
peace, you know, love, and guns, brother. We gotta bring back the militant hippie. Peace, love, and ammo.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy. I wonder. I would love to look that up. I should look that up if there has been any like group. Almost attacks or anything.
Oh, like a hippie militia, essentially, like a guerrilla.
Well, no, I guess I shouldn't say attacks. I mean, like, it's not even poisoning, just drugging.
Oh yeah, like, mass drugging. Like, yeah,
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 mass drugging. Yeah, that'd be a brand name.
Mass drugging. Yeah,
someone would argue that we have been mass drugged.
What
in various ways, but
by the Apple. Are you talking about memes?
Well, I was thinking sugar, but
oh, can't go a day without it. I shove that shit up my nose. I just take fucking sugar cubes and it hurts, but the blood means it works.
You ever snort anything off of a bat when you were like 12?
Yeah, pixie sticks, powdered Gatorade. salt, pepper. What about you?
Wow, I really unlocked a lot there.
Yeah. I mean, there's more, but we'll stop there.
Yeah. I one time at the Omniplex or the Science Museum, I snorted some sand from one of the one of the displays on a bet. I was like 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember it vividly? Like the
yeah.
Yeah. See, mine were fine because they had taste to them. I mean, even the pepper sucked, but like, I still had a kind of flavor. But sand is just grit. It's all grit, no flavor, you know?
Yeah, it hurt. Yeah, me and Zach Dugan and a few other people, Grant is someone who also did this, Grant Raven, but we were trying like swallow whole ice cubes or like most of an ice cube or swallow a gummy worm just like whole.
Dude, that's the most
uncomfortable. So there's a few times feeling. That I swallowed a gummy worm whole.
Oh, I hated swallowing ice cubes on accident. I don't think I would have played that game then. But
it's scary.
It feels so weird going down. Like,
yeah.
Just big old icy lump going down your fucking esophagus.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because some people are like, they can't even take like really small like pills, like ibuprofen or something.
Yeah.
Like they have to break it up.
Yeah, but they got to do the whole like, dude, you ever watch people like take pills and everyone does it differently? But then there's just the like, okay, wait, how do you take a pill?
A pill? I get all of them in my hand, toss them back.
Toss them in.
Toss water.
Okay, that's yeah. It. Yeah, exactly.
One swallow.
There's like people that are like fill their whole mouth up with water and then they're like, and they like have to drop it in and like.
But they put the water in first?
Yeah.
That's like putting the milk in yeah, before I know. You put it in cereal.
That's what I said. There's so many. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, I watch people take pills, and I pay attention to it, apparently. Anyways.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was just funny, I don't know, to go to the extremes of the other side. Like, what's the biggest thing you can swallow that won't kill me?
An ice cube. I think an ice cube, you could choke. No. I think you could technically choke on an ice cube, though.
You could, but the thing is, the time you might choke for a little bit, but before you die, you won't choke long enough before it melts.
I don't think it'll melt that fast.
Yeah, no, it'll melt fast once it's in your throat and you're like, you know, and it's just like all the friction, and then I don't know. That's the logic.
What if it went down the wrong pipe?
Yeah,
then you would have like ice cold pneumonia.
It would just go into your lung, and yeah. you'd become ice man.
I don't like that. Yeah. You'd be a human ice maker at that point.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, my days of doing those types of things are mostly over.
Well, yeah, you got mountains to look at now. Look at them again. I can see them in your glasses.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's kind of like I'm getting 25% of the feeling that you're getting right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Future's looking green.
Yeah. And rocky. Dude, you got to tell me if you see any goats.
Mountain goats?
Yeah. Or like elk or some crazy just like wildlife shit up there. Have you ever seen an elk in person?
An elk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're so I've seen elk.
Not a mountain goat. Not like a real mountain goat, at least. I would love to see.
I'm pretty sure they're in Utah. I could be wrong. Like,
I don't know. I'm thinking of the ones that are like that can scale the super steep.
I think so. Mountainsides. I think they are.
That'd be cool.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, there's a mountain near me called Big Baldy.
Big Baldy.
Don't know why. Just thought it was funny. Also, there's a big G on one of the mountains, just a big G.
Really? That mountain's a G. Like,
It's like, wonder what that's referring to. It's like, I need to go talk to Big G.
I mean, Big G might be on the mountains. You never know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I need to go up there, have a quick convo with Big G.
So you know? There are populations of mountain goats in the High Unitas. I don't even know if I didn't say that right. Lone Peak, Mount Olympus, Twin Peaks, and Mount
Olympus?
Yeah.
What? Bro, that's where Zeus lives.
Olympus?
Yeah.
Dude, it's in Utah.
Holy shit. I'm sure it's on the same mountain, but I'm thinking like God of War. Oh. Have you seen the show on Netflix by any chance called Murder Among the Mormons?
No.
Oh.
I don't have Netflix anymore for right now.
Good for you.
But I'm
this was like the only show I've watched in months. But it's crazy. It's about these bombings that happened in the 70s in Salt Lake City. Like where three people literally got pipe bombed. Like set up. And it involves like old Mormon documentation in the Mormon church. It's a really crazy story. But
when did this happen?
The 70s.
Okay. Damn.
Yeah. It gives like I've never been like super into the whole serial killer.
Mm-hmm. True crime
world. Yeah. True crime, yeah. Like I know that there's people that get really into that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely interesting. I'm lightly curious about it, but yeah, it kind of falls into that category of, I don't know. You're just kind of so curious about the mind behind stuff like this and how a mind like that gets created.
Mm-hmm.
But it's insane. I mean, it can happen everywhere or anywhere. Like when you see it coming out of like, you know, religious communities, not that religious communities are necessarily the ideal communities, but basically from every kind of community, every kind of world, there will be some small percentage of people, like super, super small percentage that are just, I don't know what the technical term is, but basically like psychotic or completely unsympathetic and unempathetic to others.
Mm-hmm.
Sociopathic. I think that's what that is.
Yeah. They're very rare. It's very rare when people are just born that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It usually involves cruelty done to them as a kid.
Yeah. It's common to hear about like mm-hmm. a source of trauma.
Yeah. And that's what it's weird to see like serial killers from the 70s and from that time period slowly kind of in modern culture almost become like anti-heroes to some.
Yeah.
Where they're like, well, they were treated so bad when they were kids, so it kind of makes sense that they turned everyone into a leather couch, you know? And it's like, well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but yeah, it is interesting to see them slowly become like people there. You can still see, well, and what's scary is they're still humans. You can see the humanity in them
mm-hmm.
before they do the heinous crimes or whatever. I mean, I don't know much about this guy. Was this person like, was it a group of people? Sorry. Did you say that already? Or
it was a person. It's kind of hard to talk about it without like totally spoiling it. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting is that, yeah, he has, once you find out who he is and this person gets caught, he's extremely open with talking about everything that happened, everything that he did, everything about his life. And he just talks about how from a young age he had, because this is basically a person who lived a double life. And oftentimes you find that these serial killers, they have a double life type of dynamic going, where they have a public persona, maybe even a family and a job, and they keep up with that stuff.
Have you ever read about him?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's exactly who I was thinking about, is John Wayne Gacy. So they have this incredible capacity to just like live a full normal life. I mean, mostly full, like mostly typical life, and kind of blend in and be unassuming. But then they have this part of themselves that literally they share with no one else, no one else.
Except for their victims. And that.
Oh, you broke up.
Oh, I was saying, except for
the... Oh, sorry, you broke up for a second. What was that?
Oh, it's all good. I was saying, you're saying they don't share it with anyone else except for their victims, is what I said. And that's kind of like part of it. That's almost, in a weird way, part of it for them. For some of them, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for this particular person that did these murders, he talks about from a young age how he discovered like lying and manipulation of a very certain type, and then kind of got rewarded from it at a young age, and then felt like kind of a sadistic power and control through it, and just through that feedback loop. And because the nature of the thing he was doing, the nature of it was such that he could not share it. It was a lie, was a construct of his own that he was using to define his life. Because of that, and he got this sick pleasure out of it, it just kind of grows and grows to the point to where he becomes capable of killing other people. And for me, like the way that story was told in particular, like it just made me think about that, about the kind of the dangers of almost like ego, or almost where you go so deep in your own mind, or so you develop such a separate sense of self outside of the world, where you see it different than the rest of the world. And it's so overly developed. And that's how these serial killers, and this one in particular, sounded, where it was like his sense of his control and the construct he had made and the lies and manipulation were such a dominant part of his mind, and so separated from reality and separated from the sympathy and empathy of everyone else, that it just almost pollutes your mind, where you can't resist the temptation to do what eventually becomes convenient in your path or desirable, which is, you know, to inflict harm on others.
Right.
And maybe that's not an ultimate common theme, but that kind of, I don't know, that really stood out to me. And like you see it in other types of mental sickness, where often it's a sense of a disconnection of reality, where there's an internal mind, an internal self.
Yeah.
It can't ever be redeemed or reconciled with reality.
That's why personal narratives are so dangerous. And I've been trying to like see that in people, like not acquaintances or friends, but just like everyday people you talk to. It's like, is there some kind of other narrative going on up here? Cause like, that's what starts that track down. Like the narrative in your head starts becoming more of a reality than reality itself. And that's why drugs can be dangerous too, is because sometimes some people can't distinguish between those different realities, you know, because drugs are a very like mental thing. It's up in here. And yeah, it's scary when, the narrative that someone is using in their brain starts becoming like essentially their story. Like their story in life, they're trying to control how they are in life. And some people know it's wrong, and some people don't know it's wrong. And that's another crazy like layer of it as well. Some people have the double life because they know that they shouldn't be doing it. And then there's other people, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he's very well known serial killer that was just like all by himself all the time. And like, because you know it's wrong, but you're still doing it. And I don't know.
Yeah, totally. And it's like you're talking about control. I think it is I think it is that a lot of it is that desire for a sense of control. That's why you make up these narratives in your head and pour them over and over and like make up this image of yourself. Mm-hmm. And we all do this. And like, I don't talk about this and watch this documentary and think about this guy as like, oh, I'm better and I'm different.
Right.
But more like it's an opportunity for me to reflect about my own psychopathy, you know? And, you know, there are times when I'm stressed, when I'm anxious, when a lot of things are happening and I'm kind of like, I'm talking to myself and I'm twitching and I'm kind of like, I'm totally in my own world. If someone were to come by and see me maybe for 2 or 3 seconds, they wouldn't be able to tell if I was totally insane or just right. a normal right. person in a stressful situation.
Yeah.
And like, you can catch yourself in these moments and realize like, just the stress of that and how it's not desirable.
Yeah.
But then there's other times that you can be dealing with a hard situation. I don't know. Like I just moved mm-hmm. and like moving shit up 3 flights of stairs for like 4 hours straight while there's a bunch of stuff I have to do and a bunch of things to prepare for. But it's like, that was not the same mental state. I was just like, you know, nothing going on in my mind, just right. getting through it, right. focused in the moment, like step by step.
Yeah.
Cause it was hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, those are almost like two polar opposite states of mind. And if you kind of just live in that fantasy land where you're doing more and more to construct the reality in your own head, ignoring the actual world out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just like,
it's making it tough on yourself. Really? Like, it's just, in the end, it just makes it extremely harder for you as a person, like an individual. That's what I've learned. Like, the more that I've like allowed that side of my head, because like you said, everyone has it. So like, the more I've allowed it to exist, the harder life gets almost. And it's kind of funny how that works out. But yeah, if you kind of just accept life as it's coming, you accept it on its terms, like,
it's a lot better. Mm-hmm. And that totally reminds me,
which is a Buddhist finish. approach too, but
yeah, exactly. And a lot of religions and old ideas mm-hmm. pull on that string somehow. But just to finish off this topic, that totally reminds me, in this documentary, Murder Among Mormons, all of the people that were around this killer mm-hmm. and are kind of interviewed throughout the documentary, in the end, almost all of them are destroyed and their lives were ruined just from being within the vicinity, mm-hmm. except for two of the characters who had particularly awful things happen to them. One of them had like all their wealth lost and realized they were a participant in something terrible. Another one was, well, her husband was one of the victims and died. But both of them, the two people that ended up okay, they specifically forgave. Like out of their own necessity, they forgave the killer. They forgave the whole situation and they made an intentional effort to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up being mentally the most okay. And everyone else in like the final interviews and everything's closing out, it does not seem like there's resolution. Mm-hmm. They're distraught by it. They're like crying. They're broken. Their lives have been ruined, even though this happened 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was like, oh shit. That was heavy because I don't know. That's something I've thought about a lot before, which goes right into acceptance. I think forgiveness and acceptance are kind of pretty similar or they're part of the same process. And, you know, it's like a selfish thing. You can think of it selfishly
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people should.
Dude, forgiveness is the sickest tool that I've learned, really. And it took me a long time to accept it just because I saw it in the light of like a Southern Baptist perspective. Because that's how, you know, we were similarly raised religiously, but like once you learn that forgiveness is also for you, mainly for you, like you're like, it's the best way to cope with shit, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's like, it becomes such a like useful tool. And I've like gotten rid of so many personal like burdens just by like forgiving someone in my own head too. Like maybe don't even have to tell them, like maybe someday, but like, yeah, I don't know. Forgiving is way better than harboring some kind of negative feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's insane that they would even forgive someone like that, you know, that like probably took everything, like you're saying, took everything away from them. But it still can be more powerful than holding on to. It's like, what, you're going to, your life is destroyed and you're also going to hold on to all the negativity? Nah, you'd rather just like forgive and move on and forget about it. Start the next chapter.
No, and of when it comes to forgiveness, like self-forgiveness, like you were mentioning, mm-hmm. is one of the hardest things for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like self-forgiveness and self-love. And that's why, you know, like this is kind of parallel to Buddhism, but there's meditations called, they're called loving kindness sometimes, or metta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically meditations where you invoke the feeling of love, and then you move the target of mm-hmm. what you're feeling love for. So like maybe you think of the one person, like someone in your life who you care about so much, maybe a sibling or a parent or your partner, and you imagine them like on the happiest day of their life, you know, mm-hmm. getting everything they wanted. And maybe you imagine them on the hardest day of their life
mm-hmm.
and seeing them in pain. And you kind of just invoke this feeling of just, it's just pure love. It's not ego. It's kind of separated from all of these gross daydreaming and desires and kind of the normal content of our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And you evoke this feeling, and then you take it and maybe you start to think of someone you don't like. Or maybe you start to think of yourself, or maybe you zoom out and you think of a whole town or something like that. And so people that are really into loving kindness meditation, they just like invoke forces of love within themselves and like,
yeah,
and just focus that on as many people and as many different people as they can.
That's sick.
And on themselves. And it's an interesting, I'm not like super into it. I've tried it a few times, but I mean, it's pretty interesting to just like call out that really soft feeling that you can feel towards, I don't know, your siblings. Like for me, if I think about like my brother, when we were little kids and we'd both get an ice cream bar and he dropped his, when right. when I think about something like that, like it just invokes such like a loving, like sad, pathetic feeling all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I can just take that and I can roll that into like any bullshit that's happening in my life.
Right.
It's kind of a funny experiment to try, like whatever gets you going. But yeah, I mean, for some people, it's just like self-forgiveness or self-love. Like people hate themselves.
Yeah.
And really I have at times. Mm-hmm. Like really.
Well, I feel like healthy people. Well, what's crazy is healthy people hate themselves. Like, and what I mean by that is I've been watching this YouTube channel called JCS Criminal Psychology.
Sure.
So it's funny that you're mentioning that documentary, but it shows interrogation videos of people who have committed crimes. It's shown a couple of school shooters. It's shown a couple of actual psychopaths. And it's interesting that you say, like, you know, or, well, what I was thinking, like, healthy people usually don't like the thoughts that drive them to do, like, horrible things. Because, you know, it starts with those negative thoughts. I mean, and then it just can't get rid of them. But, like, there will be some people on that YouTube channel that know that the negative thought that drove them to do something horrible, they know that it's bad, but they don't feel that, like, almost that, like, self-hatred of, like, man, I wish I was doing better, or I wish I, like, I wish I hadn't done that. That channel's really good at, distinguishing between people who are kind of like these school shooter types, that some of them really are just, they did it because they were being shitty, essentially. Like, they're just a shitty person, and they don't really, they're probably just more upset they got caught. And then there's some people that are on there that are, like, physically or mentally, sorry, they are mentally like, I got caught. Yeah, this is what I did. They'll just confess the whole entire crime to the interrogation person because they're like, yeah, you caught me. I don't feel remorse. I don't hate myself for it. Like, this is what had to happen. Whereas the other people who are like, they'll like start playing insanity, essentially. Like, they'll start like pretending to see shit in the room, and like, because they don't want to get caught still. You know what I'm saying? So it's,
yeah,
like,
or they just can't take on,
they can't deal with the self-hatred that they've been putting off.
Yeah.
Because they like can't believe that they finally like just, yeah, shot a bunch of people or something. Like, they have to blame some like demon or some entity that is in the room, and they'll start like saying shit and whispering, and the interrogator will just be like, oh yeah, is the demon in the room with us right now? Like, just kind of, I don't know. It's interesting to see the lack of self-hatred in a person, which can almost be detrimental, and then like people running away from that self-hatred and seeing how it plays out in individual, in like different people. Mm-hmm. If that even makes sense. That might have been a long, long road to a...
Well, I see what you're kind of saying. Like, if you have absolutely no self... I don't like the term self-hatred.
Right, for it. Yeah, yeah.
Kind of just like self-critique.
Yeah.
If you have none of that, then maybe that can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. But if you have, if you're just full of it, then, you know, that can be dangerous in its own,
yeah,
in its own right for many different reasons. But I just know for me, erring on the side of less, of thinking of myself less, is much, just kind of makes me happier. Because it's a lot. It's a lot to do if you create an image, and we all have to create an image kind of to like try and embody something and go out in the world and do something. But it's really a burden, because it's not, an image can never really be you. Like, if you're zeroing in on what is exactly you and you're trying to create it with a story or persona in your head, and then like communicate that out into the world, it's like already a construct from the very start. So like it can't be done. And that makes sense to me. And normally I communicate the best, or I don't know, I like myself the best. I have the most peace. I have the most fun and connection whenever I'm not thinking about me on the meta level of like, am I preserving my image, am I
right,
whatever, am I liked, am I being funny, am I being annoying, am I being this, am I being that, like whenever I'm not thinking of those things and I'm in the moment, I'm genuinely connecting with people, that's when I'm most myself. That's when, I don't know, it's kind of an irony a little bit, but it's just like turning that off as much as I can has been for me like the best social tool and like mental health tool. And you know, that's why social media and all of these things can be so damaging for people mentally, or take such a toll and such a stress on it.
Yeah. Do you find it easier to be able to be in that mindset after moving, maybe because you don't know like a lot of the coworkers you have and everything are like, you're meeting them for the first time, probably, I'm assuming, right? So is it almost easier to kind of like reinstall that way of thinking, I guess?
It's actually interesting. No, I've definitely noticed, and it's interesting. It's interesting because, well, like back home, everything that I've done, how do I say this? Basically, back home, people have a sense of who I am.
Right.
You know, as much as maybe I would try and change myself, everyone kind of has an idea of my character and my past. Mm-hmm. And so people know you. So there's a sense that even if you're doing new things or even if you've changed a lot, you're still kind of dragging that old image.
Right.
And you never really escape it. And so, but then over the last 3 to 4 years, I've started, when I wanted to become a software developer, you know, when you have an idea like that, or you start to pursue something like that, you're almost creating a new image of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, because, you know, you're thinking about what am I going to do? How am I going to spend my time? What am I going to learn? You know, what is it going to feel like? And then you just start to construct kind of this story, kind of this idea of how you'll make it, how you'll get through. And so, you know, I constructed this idea of me as a software person, whatever. And kind of that was not the dominant image I had, though, when I was in Oklahoma, because mm-hmm. everything was kind of the same in my life.
Yeah.
Had the same job, had the same friends. But like, as soon as I got here, nobody knows who I really am. Nobody knows my past.
Right.
They really don't know right. much about me. And they just kind of have an assumption of who I am, which is like this fit in the box, just kind of a young mm-hmm. software kid.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. My boss, she said something like, when she was talking to me, she was like, "Austin, I know you've always been an overachiever, so don't do this and don't do this." And I was just thinking, I was like, "Oh my God, you have no fucking idea." But anyway, so all that to say, like, it's kind of weird. It's more of just, I'm seeing how fake and how much of a construct these images are. You know, I could be going all in, putting all my chips on this new identity,
right?
And be like, yeah, I'm going to be a total tech bro. Like, I'm going to be the ultimate tech bro and go all in on it. But it's like, I don't know. I'm not this, just like I wasn't the image that I had before or whatever I thought I was before.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like, it's unknown. It's not, you can never, as soon as you define yourself, that thing that you define is like, you've already changed. You've already become something different.
Right.
So it's kind of just, the truth is what you do. So that's kind of made that more obvious to me. And it's just, I don't know. It's a strange identity crisis, mm-hmm. really, is all it feels like. But it's cool because I don't really have to try. I don't feel like I care what people think of me here too much.
Yeah, that's sick. It's pretty easy not to care what people think of you in Oklahoma as well, though. That's all I've learned growing up. The longer I stay here, the more I'm like, if anyone, not saying anyone has, but if anyone were to ever judge me or anyone else, it's like, we're all living in Oklahoma, yo. I mean, at least if you judge from Oklahoma.
No, I feel like in a way I feel like that, but it's also, when you run into people from your past, from mm-hmm. deep in your past, when one of those people could be right around the corner,
mm-hmm.
it almost feels like that past self comes out. Like, I don't know, that child is still inside.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to escape from it. But here, there's no one, and I could be using that to run away from whatever,
right.
what I'm scared of about myself, but I don't think I'm doing that.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Well, it'd be good. It'd be interesting. I'm sure that there's maybe not enough people that are just trying to truly stay themselves. I'm sure there's a lot of people that do take that easy way out, which, I mean, you know, if it works for them, it works for them, of like just riding that new, not personality, but I mean, essentially a life-changing move. So, yeah, it would be easy for some to just throw it into neutral, I guess, or whatever you call it, and just cruise.
No, definitely. And in a lot of ways, like, that's the whole theme of this podcast. Like, that type of stuff, it scares me. Even though it's a lot more attractive to be maybe a software engineer than it is to be trapped in another type of cubicle job. Nonetheless, if you go on YouTube and you search like day in the life of a software engineer or anything like that, like, just the popular image, it's like a new type of celebrityization, a new type of just a way to be cool in the world. And it's fun. Like, if you learn that skill and then you get the job, and the world is just glorifying it, and, you know, you can just dive into all of that, and just, it just makes so much sense. It's so attractive. But for me, when I see it, it's like, it's scary because I know it's not genuine. And also I got into this not to be, I don't know, not to become, because I want to do stuff. Because I want to make stuff, not because I wanted to go at some big fancy tech company that just has a fancy office and spoils you all the time. And all that you do is slightly improve some metric on some tiny product, some big giant company. Like, that was not what I wanted to do. And for a lot of people, like, that's their dream. That's where they're trying to end up at. Like, if they make it at Google, that's it.
Right. Like, yeah. What's
next? You should be happy at that point.
What's next, though?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, is what's next.
And yeah.
I've worked with people now, and I've talked with people who, someone I've met with like every week, he used to work at Facebook and Google and all of these tech companies. Really, in the last 10 years, he's lived the life that everyone that wants to get in the software, you know, he's done the things that all of them wanted to do. And when me and him were talking, you know, we were both relating to the same exact thing, which was like, I was telling him, like, oh, I've been kind of distracted lately. Like, I haven't been working on my side projects and kind of getting my stuff done quite like I want to. And he was telling me the same exact thing. Like, oh, yeah, I want to do this. And like, really wanted to get into this and make this into something, but just work and this and that. And it's like, you know, this guy has everything. So probably everyone, he's probably a millionaire as far as I know. He's had the career that everyone's wanted to have. And here he is, and me and him are feeling bad about ourselves for the same exact reason. And for me, that was like confirming. I was like,
yeah.
This isn't going to make me happy. This isn't the path I want to take.
Like, right.
I don't know.
That's interesting.
But, yeah, man, you're gonna have to come up here.
Yeah, dude.
We'll do like an in-person.
I've got a cushion now, so I'm trying to get some, I don't even know how to get flight points, but I'm trying to figure out how to do that and take more flights places. So I'm taking my first one next month to Colorado. And then after that, I would, I would love to, I thought about driving, but I don't know. I would have to get like a rental. And at that point, it's not worth it. I'd rather just fly. But yeah, no, I'd love to come up and hang out, go hiking, go skating.
Yeah.
Do all kinds of shit.
Dude, this is actually a great place to longboard.
Really?
Like, all just the roads so many are super hills smooth.
And smooth in it. Yeah.
And everything is curvy. Like the blocks, there's no square blocks. Everything is curvy around the hills.
The one time I did stay in Utah, the neighborhood I stayed in, you had to take like a curvy downhill like road to get to the main road, and the whole time I was just like, fuck, I should have brought my skateboard.
that's usually
the first thought I have anytime I'm out of town is, fuck, I should have brought my skateboard.
When is your show in Colorado?
July 20th at the Black Sheep in Colorado Springs with Carnifex. I think it's just Cell and Carnifex. There might be other might be locals. I don't know. We're the only local, I think, technically. Yeah. It'll That's be, cool. yeah, we'll see what happens. I've not been to a Carnifex show since 2011. that's 10 years.
Yeah.
So,
it's crazy.
I don't even know what the fuck they sound like anymore. But yeah, well, it'll be, we'll see how it goes.
It's cool. It's funny how like you and Skylar and these other people made this band as kind of like a side, side project with not much effort, and you're getting more attention.
Yeah.
It's a lot of everyone's main bands.
I mean, and what's funny is like, it's basically Michael, the guitarist, wrote everything. And so, I mean, and then, the video we shot, like that was all the dude that did the video, Easter. I just fucked up his name. Easter Daily. Or Eric Easterday. Sorry, that's his Instagram handle. It was all thanks to basically the people we worked with. I mean, and that's what's crazy to see. That's what's cool about projects like that, you know. Just doing we're basically the manpower, and they are like the ideas that got us any type of traction, and knowing like what YouTube channel to upload it to, like I don't know, just all that stuff that I've never really like. I didn't do any of that, so it's interesting to see how it's shaped after taking that approach. You know,
yeah,
just knowing where to post it, who to work with, that type of stuff. Yeah, it's weird to see it play out.
That's what we need to get good at, man.
Yeah, for real. I'm trying.
We need to get someone who's good at that to come give us some consulting.
Yeah, for real.
Live on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We could do that. Well, and what's weird is it's just always changing, I feel like. And with especially heavy metal music, I think it's hard to plan on where is it going to be in the next 5 years. It's changed even from when we were going to shows when we were in high school, you know? Like, if you think of how they were back then as opposed to now, like, it's just the evolution of it has changed so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, well, in a lot of ways, we're operating on the fringes of these sub genres. And so that's where things are kind of flickering and changing, and experiments are being tried. And you kind of just position yourself. And if the spotlight comes to you, you know, if your particular sound gets a new wave of interest, For a lot of bands, that's how I've seen it happen. But also, there's a way that you can put yourself out there in such a way to where you grow and a lot of eyes see you.
Right.
And that's what I've always been. Well, both of us have always been not great at. But also, it feels weird. It feels gross.
Yeah.
Strange things.
I never know when is the right time to start treating myself as like a. I'm just involved in so many different bands. I never know when to start being like when do I start promoting this stuff legitimately? Or like, do I always just need to stay how I've always been, which is a dude that just likes playing music, essentially is all of what I want to do. And it has nothing to do with recognition or like what band or what, how much hype any of them get, you know. It just has to do with, I like playing instruments, different kinds of instruments. I want to collect instruments when I get older, like everything from brass to string and wind, you know, like just music and making music with other people is all I want to do. And I hate that a lot of artists or whatever nowadays, it's all about the like branding. So when people even start talking about it and they're super knowledgeable about it, sometimes it's really hard for me to want to listen. but yeah. but I'm wondering if it's becoming a detriment and I need to just like train some of my brain to be knowledgeable in that stuff if I'm going to keep doing it. But we'll see.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some part of it that's necessary, some part of it that's practical, but what's the balance
mm-hmm.
and what, yeah, when is the right time? When is the right thing? Like I haven't quite, like I've promoted some of the stuff I've done, like some of the projects I've made, but I haven't quite hit a consistency with one of them or known that I was going to be doing something specifically
mm-hmm.
for a long time to really say that like, yeah, I'm going to invest in this. Like this is the next 3 years of what my work represents or whatever. It's hard. I haven't been able to define anything or quite put it in a box or put it in any kind of package. It's like easy to spread virally or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what it is. And, but once it's time, you know, like if I want to, whatever I want to do, if I want to do it on my own, whether it has something to do with software or music or any number of things I might get into, you know, I need to have some kind of ability to communicate it because that's really what it is. It feels less gross to say communicating than like branding or anything like that. But it's like, yeah, communicating, storytelling, like what is the story behind what you're doing, what you're into. And because that's what people relate to. And when people relate, I think that's what makes them want to follow, makes them want to see it, makes them curious. So, but yeah, we'll get some Scotty up in here or something.
Yeah. What is that called? What kind of rep is that? A PR rep? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
We need some PR,
get our PR reps in.
We need our social media manager, to get us some of that metalcore money, you know? That's what we're fucking fiending for at the end of the day. That metalcore Bitcoin.
Soon. Once we're streaming Bitcoin for every second of riffage.
When's the tooth shit coin coming out?
We'll
call it a one gold tooth.
That would be an NFT.
Okay, yeah. We'll make one gold tooth.
No, we're not going to do that.
Tooth, you heard it here. Tooth NFTs.
One gold tooth coming 2030.
Yep.
2030. Sweet, man. You want to call it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yep. Appreciate it.